Good evening and welcome to another edition of Midwest Beat. I'm Tom Lounges. Tonight, my guest, Echoes of Pompeii, a tribute to Pink Floyd. They're going to be live in the studio this evening, performing some stripped-down acoustic versions of some Pink Floyd songs. We'll be sharing information about their career, how they do what they do, and their upcoming New Year's Eve concert at Theater at the Center in Munster. Echoes of Pompeii is a 10-piece group who recreate the music and magic of Pink Floyd. They're in studio. We're going to strip down a little bit here and play some acoustic versions of Pink Floyd. We're going to talk about the big show coming up, the really big show on New Year's Eve at Theater at the Center. We're going to tell you how to get tickets. But right now, let's welcome everybody to the studio. From the group, we've got Jeremy.
Hello.
Jason.
I do.
Allison.
Hi.
Jessica.
Hey.
And Andy hiding in the corner.
Hello.
How come you get stuck in the corner there? You've been a bad boy?
The guitar players always get stuck in a corner. It's all right, because we're generally loud, so we need to be stuck in a corner.
All right, I thought maybe you were on Santa's naughty list or something.
It could be.
Let's talk about Echoes of Pompeii. Now, the Andrews brothers here have been together a long time doing the Mr. Funny Man band, going back decades almost. When we were all younger.
Right.
And Echoes have kind of sprung from that. Now, Echoes has been around a long time as well. But How did this all come together that you've separated the two groups?
Well, we did Pink Floyd while we were in our Mr. Funny Man. And we got a lot of people asking us if we ever thought about doing anything, just an all Pink Floyd show. And so it took us about 15 years to actually come up with one, but We actually did, and then we started about 2005 doing these Pink Floyd shows. And the great thing about having both of them, you have, the girls that sing, so we incorporated them back into Mr. Funny Man. So now we can, not only have the Echoes of Pompeii, but you got Mr. Funny Man and add the girls with it. It's really made us a lot more well-rounded of a group as far as Mr. Funny Man. But, when it comes to Echoes of Pompeii, they just add that three-part harmony in the back, and it just, just makes the Pink Floyd music has its authenticity along with it, with the girls in the back like that. So, but it's great. We've had a great time with it. We got to meet a lot of people, and, we still play locally, and every once in a while we get a chance to play out and do something really special. Not that, the ones aren't special around here,
right?
But sometimes you get to go to Sturgis, sometimes you get to go to LA, sometimes.
So you are touring now more?
Well, a little bit. We'll get special invitations to places, and so depending on what their accommodations are, we'll go ahead and make arrangements to go out to these different places like LA or South Dakota, and go out to wherever people want to see.
Is everybody up for touring and traveling? Is everybody free of day jobs and things like that, that they can just pick up and go where the calling comes from?
Well, I think, if once it gets to that point, we'll see how it goes. But I mean, as of right now, we all have our day jobs, and we just basically the weekend warriors like everybody else out there in the local scene. But we have access to have some time off with our job, so where we can take time to do radio shows like such as this, and do other spots on other things, and even if you have one of the weekend and you could take off a Friday, we have flexible hours in our work schedule.
Now, I noticed in the last year and a half or so, you've been working real close with a mutual friend, Mankow.
Yeah.
And doing stuff.
So, yeah.
Even though I don't normally talk about other DJs on the show, Kyle is cool. So you guys have been doing some stuff with him. How did that connection come together?
Well, we were playing a theater up in St. Charles called the Arcata Theater.
Okay, familiar
and
with that.
And he happened to come out and see us. So he wanted to meet with us and have dinner. And so we went out with him and did that. And we had a really great conversation. And we got to be on his radio show after that, and then now it's sprung into, now I think we're doing his birthday. We're doing his birthday party on the 4th of July weekend. So, we've struck a pretty good friendship with him, and we got to meet a lot of good people, through him.
Mm-hmm.
So we've had
So the word is spreading a little bit,
yeah,
though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got to meet people like Donnie Wahlberg. He's having us out again in June. So there's a lot of exciting things that are happening this next year, and
Janie McCarthy, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How would I be your roadie when you work for her?
Oh, yeah. She's still just as beautiful as ever. Mm-hmm. I mean, I couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe
it. I couldn't get anybody to carry my guitar to any gig, but when Jenny McCartney's there, I got like 15 roadies signing up for it.
That's right.
Yeah, let me carry a cable in. I'll carry a cable in.
I'll handle your picks.
Yeah.
So you guys are enjoying this as well, ladies?
Yeah, for sure. It's really fun.
How long have you been with Echoes now, the two of you?
I've been with them for about 3 years now.
This past November was my second year with them. But it's been really awesome, the whole experience.
How did the two of you come to join up with the group? Allison, let's start with you. What's your background in music here in the region?
My background with music, I just kind of started singing. I did open mic nights with a couple of my friends kind of when I was 20, 21. And then I would do open mic nights with my brother a little bit here and there. And then I didn't really start in this band until one of the former singers that used to sing with them. She was one of my friends. And somebody else I used to sing with works with somebody who works with Jeremy and Jason, and they were like, oh, they're looking for a backup singer for the Pink Floyd band. And I already knew about Echoes of Pompeii, and I was so jealous of my friend. I'm like, because I'm such a huge Pink Floyd fan, I'm like, that's a dream job. And I was like, wait, is it Echoes of Pompeii? And he was like, yeah. So I was so excited, and then I just tried out, and then they asked me to be in Mr. Funny Man as well.
I saw you with Mr. Funny Man when you guys did that special needs program about a year or so ago. And what a great... That was the first time I saw the ladies with you guys.
Yeah, and, isn't it so much
really
better?
Really adds so much.
I love it. I mean, we can just add so much,
more music. There's really... Adding the girls with it, there's no limit to what we can play. I mean, we go from anything from Michael Jackson to, you know, ABBA. I mean,
ABBA. That was pretty cool.
The whole gamut.
Nobody
and
does
it's just
ABBA.
Really, there's really no limit to what, you know, what we can't play without these girls, for sure.
Jessica, how'd you get in the picture?
So actually, I went to Columbia College Chicago, and I got a degree in contemporary popular music. When I graduated, I was doing, you know, piano teaching jobs and things like that, and I said, you know, I really want to utilize my degree more. I actually started hosting open mic nights at Studio 659 in Whiting for a while there, and there was one day that I just happened to sing, and I had a partner with me who was playing guitar. I was singing, and one of Jeremy's friends actually came up to me after open mic and said, hey, you know, you have like a phenomenal voice, and I know this guy who's looking for a singer. And I think at the time she was talking about Funny Man, and so I decided to, you know, call Jeremy and say, hey, you know, if you're looking for a girl singer, I'd be happy to try out. I tried out, and I think Jeremy said, hey, you know, would you be interested in doing the Pink Floyd stuff too? And to be honest, I never really listened to Pink Floyd before I auditioned with them. But now that I'm fully immersed in it, I don't know how I could have even gone that long without listening to it. Really, it's like, it's just such, you know, classic music. It's timeless, and it's just, oh my gosh, like, where has it been all my life, you know? So, yeah.
It's been in the headphones.
Yeah. Right.
One of us.
let's do something. Speaking of utilizing your talents, you guys have guitars on, you got microphones, and what do you want to do? Let's do something live.
How about we do the one where we just learned?
Goodbye Blue Sky.
That one.
Ooh. see the frightened ones. Did you hear the falling bombs? The flames are all long gone. The pain lingers on. Goodbye, blue sky. Goodbye, blue sky. Goodbye. Goodbye.
Wild. All right. Tasty stuff there. That's just a sample of what you're going to get if you go on New Year's Eve to the Theater at the Center. Always got to get that name right. Theater at the Center. Let's talk about that show. You guys are going to be doing New Year's Eve. Now, this is a package deal, a dinner show kind of thing, correct?
The show and dinner package are separate. So when you call in, just call in at the Theater of the Center, and they'll direct you towards what the buffet is going to be, the cost on that, and the cost of the tickets. We're going to have two shows. One starts at 6 p.m. and one starts at 10. They're both two-hour shows, which will probably run a little over due to a couple of maybe, you know, an old ensemble or a, mm-hmm. you know, an encore or something.
So if you want to stay out all night and party, you go to the later show.
Right.
You guys will be up for two shows, and that's got to take a lot out of you.
Yeah.
It does take a lot out of you. You know, it's one of the, especially when you have a long break in between, mm-hmm. you know, and you have that, when you already do the one show and you put all your, you know, your energy into the one, and then have to come down off of it and then try to get it back again back at 10 o'clock.
Right. Yeah. So how much of a break do you have? About an hour in between?
They're probably about an hour and a half in between breaks.
And you can get information and get your tickets online at theateratthecenter.com. That's theater, R-E, not E-R, theateratthecenter.com. You can also give them a call at the box office, which is 219-836-3255. And Theater at the Center, if you've never been there, is a beautiful venue. I'm not quite sure how many seats it holds, but it's set up almost like semicircle, almost in a round.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's 410, isn't it?
410 seats? I believe, yeah.
Yeah.
You're right. And it does. It goes into a half circle,
mm-hmm.
you know.
So it's not a bad seat in the house.
No. That's what I like about this. You're really intimate with the crowd. You're very close, as opposed to some theaters we might play. There's people that are, you know, they're far, so far away from you, you just don't feel that, you know, that close vibe that you can get off the audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Theater at the Center, I think the furthest seat seemed like it was only like maybe, I mean, honest to God, maybe 50, 70 feet away from where we're at. So there's really not a bad spot. You're right there on it.
Now, with this type of show, visual is as important as the sound. You guys definitely have the sound down. How long did it take to get the visual? Because that's very expensive, the production end. Now, you own your own shows. How do you do that? Do you choreograph and create your own visuals in-house?
Well, we do get a lot of help from our video crew and our lighting guys. And so we own a lot of the trussing, and we own a lot of the you know, the stuff that holds everything up. But as far as the lights themselves, we have somebody that comes out and takes care of all of that for us.
Because you've got the lasers, you've got like the rear projection stuff with the hammers.
I mean,
first time I ever saw a rear projection on a local stage was when you did the Lake County Fair.
Yes.
And you had that big circle, looked like a giant drum head.
Yes.
And you had the marching hammers and things on there.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, these guys are local? This is crazy.
Yeah, we still have the circle truss, and we got Joe and Cindy come out. They're a package deal. And Joe will do the lasers, and Cindy takes care of all our visual aids. And a lot of the stuff she comes up with is just so dead on for the music. It's mm-hmm. just so – if you're watching that, it just takes you right into the song. It just really captures the feeling of it.
Yeah, they work really hard on that.
Yeah, they do.
And I think, you know, John Lincoln, he's part of it too. He's you know, he does the sound, and he's actually going to do – you know, the lights, not the lasers, but the actual, you know, the movers and stuff mm-hmm. like and such.
Yeah, there's so many layers to what we got to do. I mean, you got stage lighting, then you got the lasers, and you got the video, and you got the sound. It, you know, it ends up there's, you know, darn near 20 people working on a show. just to make it work.
It's like the real Pink Floyd out there.
Yeah, how about it?
Like Andy says all the time, it's not easy to do sound for us because of what kind of band we are, but John Lincoln really, you know, he's probably one of the biggest reasons why we have that sound.
Mm-hmm. John's been around a long time.
Yeah, and, you know, and there's 11 musicians on the stage, you know, that's a lot, you know. And
now, is John doing the sound and he's lighting director too?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
With a band like you guys?
Yeah, how about it?
Well, you know, we have everything choreographed now to where everything should, you know, is set.
Right.
So we had to set it with what's going on with the video and what's going on, you know, with the lighting. So we had to kind of all get together and figure out when and where. But everything...
One misstep and the whole show goes.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but you know what, though? Yeah. The thing is a lot like the band. You got John, he isn't by himself. He's got a great crew that works with him. Mm-hmm. And Joe and Cindy, they got a great crew that works with them with the video and everything and the lasers. It's a huge undertaking. There's just a lot of people that go to make it look right and be the right presentation of what we want to do.
We were talking 2005. You guys got this thing spun off of Mr. Funny Man. You've got 11 members total. Who's the newest member?
Let's see. Our newest member would probably be
Joshua,
which would be my brother here's son, mm-hmm. and he plays pretty much everything. So if what we've done
he's like a utility player?
Yes, absolutely.
Keyboards, guitar. Hell, he broke out a harmonica one time.
Yeah.
John?
Huh?
Well, John Albright.
John Albright. He's also maybe the newest guy. Mm-hmm. But the actual core of the band, you know, me, Jeremy, and Andy are probably still, you know, the core of it. That's who's left, who started it. You know, and we had a keyboard player who just left, Rob Martinez. He was a great keyboard player.
He was with
you
a long time.
Yeah, 23 years.
Yeah, we started back in 92. It was a while ago.
And then we accrued Greg Biltman. And, man, he's just... been wonderful and out of sight. He gets all the, you know, the vintage and the authentic sounds of Pink Floyd that we search for. And that's half the fun of it is trying to get, you know, the actual sounds that they used. And it just helps so much, even when you're singing.
Mike too, Mike, our drummer.
Yeah, our drummer. I should mention him too.
Give it to the drummer.
Give it to the drummer.
He does a lot with the sound effects also. Yeah.
Is he playing electronic drums?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
With the Pink Floyd show that you're doing New Year's Eve, you mentioned two shows. Are they exactly the same because of the production?
Yeah. We wanted to keep it the same just to make it a lot easier on us and a lot easier on the crew, you know, instead of changing something.
Make it a smoother show for sure.
Yeah. All right. Again, you can find tickets at theaterthecenter.com. All the information on the show we're talking about for New Year's Eve. Get prices, get times, and all the things you need to know. And we're going to play another song in just a second here. But one of the things I want to point out that makes you guys pretty unique is you don't just do the dark side kind of stuff. You do everything now. You've expanded the show. You're doing the early Syd Barrett years, you know, Saucer Full of Secrets kind of stuff. You're also doing the post-Roger Waters stuff. Am I correct on that?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you cover it from A to Z as far as Pink Floyd's concerned. Let's go around. Jeremy, let's start with you. What is your favorite era of Pink Floyd?
My favorite album would be my sister turned me on to The Wall probably when I was about 10 years old. And it had just come out about a year before that. And I just took it on from there. I just put my headphones on and I just listened for every little bell and whistle and sound. And I memorized the whole thing. And it just, that's the one that took me away.
Now that's like mid-period Pink Floyd. Yeah, that's like the vintage years. Jason, what about you?
I was a Dark Side of the Moon guy. That's the one that took me away. The first time I heard the solo of Time, I couldn't believe it. I was in my buddy's house, and it just took me away. I couldn't even believe that that was even actually a guitar doing that sound, you know?
Right.
And it just flowed so much, and ever since then, I think I might have been 11 or 12 years old when I first heard that, and ever since then, I just was drawn to that, you know, to that sound. And it's funny how they did, you know, progress from one sound to another, and each album kind of does have their own sound. It's not... Never, you know, you could see a couple of off of metal going into, like, if you have a song like Echoes, kind of resembles a lot of the Dark Side of the Moon stuff, and they were kind of close together. But really, when you got a, you know, Wish You Were Here or on Animals, you know, there's a lot of it that is just so different, you know, than each other. That's what I liked about them. They could change their voices and they could change their sound so much that it could be, you know, they just made a different kind of music every time.
Now, Animals is one of those albums that just seems to sometimes be forgotten. We always hear about The Wall. We always hear about Dark Side. But Animals was right there in the thick of it. And to me, it's one of the best albums they've done. Absolutely. We don't hear a lot. We don't hear it on the radio. We don't hear anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad you mentioned that. That was a great album.
Didn't we do, at the Radisson one year, we did the whole Animals album, too.
Yeah. We have a place actually out in Chicago that we play at Reggie's. And he comes up and he asks us to do albums. So, you know, that's where it started to doing the older with the Syd Barrett stuff. And I'm telling you, that stuff is difficult.
Right.
You know, a lot of, you know, Syd really didn't get a lot of credit, I don't think, because of how commercialized they got after he left. But I mean, he was truly to me a genius, you know, he just wrote profound music that I just it's hard to copy.
Mm-hmm.
That's for sure.
He was quite the mad genius. He gave us Gerald, for gosh sakes.
Yes.
Let's talk about your favorite, Allison.
I'm probably with Jason, Dark Side of the Moon. I kind of got into that, you know, like middle school, high school. But growing up, my parents would play Pink Floyd throughout the house all the time, like Metals and Animals is one of my other favorite ones. So I was already familiar with it, but once I got older, I started really recognizing it for what it is and just getting into it more. Like Dark Side of the Moon, Animals, and then The Wall, of course. And then I wasn't really into any of the more 80s stuff until I joined band. And I was like, yeah, I kind of knew about that song, but I didn't really care for it.
Mm-hmm.
But then once you're like in it, in the music, and you're singing it, and you learn it, it's like you appreciate it. So, you know, I'm kind of more aware of their more 80s stuff. But yeah, Dark Side of the Moon is probably when I got most familiar with it.
All right, Jessica, you're the newbie as far as Pink Floyd fandom here. What did you start with?
So, I started with Dark Side of the Moon, of course, and that was the one that completely blew me away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just like, what? I missed all of this. How come no one told me? But no, you know, like Jason and Jeremy were saying before, as we continued doing all these new albums, I gained more appreciation. You know, when we learned the whole Animals album, that was like, wow, this stuff is really, really great. And, you know, we did the whole Metal album. We did the whole Wish You Were Here album. So as we do these albums, I'm learning more and more about it and just becoming all around like a complete Pink Floyd fan.
Wow. Andy, what's your favorites?
You know what I like? I listened to him when I was a kid with Jason and Jeremy. We listened to The Wall all the time. But the stuff that really touched me was like the Momentary Lapse of Reason and the more later stuff.
So you're a David Gilmour fan?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, for sure. I mean, the stuff he did on them albums was unbelievable. It's just the tone. And they were more like orchestra pieces than they were just, you know, rock and roll songs. You know, they had a whole... There's so many layers to it, and when we get together with the band and we start to learn these songs, and I mean, there's not just a keyboard part, there's keyboard parts. There's 3 and 4 parts to that. There's not just vocal parts. There's, you know, there's a chorus singing along with what 4 other guys are singing harmonies with, and there's just so many layers to it. That's the music that really touched me.
You know, a lot of people, when Roger and David had their split and they went their solo ways, a lot of people divided camps. It was almost like Van Halen, you know, a different singer. What were your thoughts when that happened? Did you think, oh boy, here it goes? Or were you anticipating the new sounds?
Well, you know, I was right there when I was learning about Pink Floyd is when they just split up. I didn't have much of a... You know, when I was, I think they split up in 81 or 83.
83.
So, you know, at that time I was 13, so I wasn't really much into, you know, one-sidedness. But as I go along and I see interviews, I go back and forth on who might have been right and who might have been wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that was the case at all. I think they just both had different visions. And, you know, in that sort of situation, when you're that powerful into the music industry, for two people to have two different visions is just kind of a recipe for disaster, I guess. If
we see that with a lot of the big bands, the longevity bands, the Stones, the Beatles, somehow those guys worked it out for a while, but Pink Floyd kind of imploded there.
Yeah.
The other guys don't really get their their just due. Richard Wright, Nick Mason, they seem to be forgotten, and those guys were the heartbeat of it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, every time somebody would try out for drums, they would always say, "Well, I was never really much of a Mason fan, but I'll try it out." And they could never get it because they have such, diverse the meters that they use. They change meters in the middle of the songs, and they just couldn't, comprehend when to do it and how to change.
Yeah, the music, it sounds simple when Nick Mason played it, but none of the stuff he played was simple. It would change meter, it would change direction, in a blink of an eye. And it's like Jason was saying, we'd have drummers come in and it's like, "Oh yeah, I know it." And they would come down to playing, it's like, "No, dude, you really don't know it." It sounds simple, but it's really not.
Yeah, and Richard Wright was such a just instrumental part on Dark Side of the Moon. He came up with all those jazz chords.
Oh, yeah.
I was watching a special on him, and he's the one that basically wrote most of the songs on that. Like, The Grey King of the Sky was his. He came up with the Us and Them. I'm pretty sure he came up with even Breathe. So he was the one writing all those jazz chords down. So I don't think he gets enough credit because I think it turns into like it did for the Beatles, the George Harrison type thing. He didn't get the credit he should have got.
Right.
So you get the two big guys like Lennon and McCartney. It's kind of like Gilmore and Waters, and Ringo obviously never got any credit. He's actually a great drummer. I think he's a good drummer. So. Yeah.
What are your thoughts on what Roger Waters doing now as far as the solo wall tours, things like that?
I love it.
Have you seen him on his own?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We all went, what was it, last year or year before last? We went to go see him?
2 years ago, I think it was at the United Center. We had really bad seats, and then somebody was up there and said, "You guys want to upgrade?" And we said, "Yes, we do." So we got some really good seats, and I thought he was great in concert. And the chorus of guys that he had on there to help him out with it. I think he had the guy from Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, G.E. Smith. G.E. Smith playing guitar and bass. He had a dynamite crew with him, man.
Yeah.
They were...
I saw him in like 2006, I think. Was it the amphitheater?
Amphitheater,
Where it's outside?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, the World, Well, the amphitheater was gone by then.
Yeah.
I was young when they took that one down.
Yeah, how about it?
So, well, let's play another song. What do you guys want to do?
Mother?
Yeah.
Let's do some Mother.
Mother, do you think they'll drop the bomb? And Mother, do you think they'll like the song? Mother, do you think they'll try to break my balls? But ooh, Mother, should I build a wall? Mother, should I run for president? Mother, should I trust the government? And Mother, when they put me in the firing line, but waste of time.
Hush now, baby, baby, don't you cry. Mama's gonna make all of your nights.
mama's gonna help build a wall. Think she's good enough? Mother didn't need to be so high.
Yay! I love playing in this band.
All right. Classic Pink Floyd. You are listening to Echoes of Pompeii live on Midwest Beat here on Lakeshore Public Radio. They're performing not one but two shows on New Year's Eve at the Theater at the Center, which is the Performing Arts Center on Ridge Road in Munster. And again, that is on Saturday, December 31st, New Year's Eve. 6 p.m. is the first show. Second show at 10 p.m. There is a buffet before each show at 4:30 and 8:30, respectively. And again, tickets available and information at theateratthecenter.com. Let's talk about how hard it is to learn a song. You were talking about, oh, we learned this song, we learned that song. How, being as complex as Pink Floyd is, and being that you have to literally listen to the albums with your headphones on and pick it apart and dissect it, how long does it take for you guys to be comfortable learning a new song and taking it to the stage for the first time?
Probably, honest to God, probably about a month, because we take the same type of principle as you would with a high school band, where we're separating singers from guitar players, from keyboardists, and it's like separating sections, the horns from the woodwinds, and it really does. It takes about a week or so to get the vocals down, and then while they're doing that, we're working on music. It'll take a good, an honest to God month to get the song down to just where we know it, not to where we're playing it perfect all the time, mm-hmm. but playing it and knowing what we're supposed to be playing.
Yeah, because we only practice once a week, you know, so we really try and get a lot done with what the time that we do have. I mean, everybody in the band is busy, you know, so when we do learn a song, it's like, all right, everybody learns their parts, let's bring it all together and let's you know, hammer it out. And I've been there a couple times where these guys, they do the same part, and they do it over, and they do it over, and, you know, someone will say, you know what, that's not quite right, let's keep let's keep at it. Let's keep doing it. And then they'll do it again just to make sure that everybody's on the same page. So, you know, they don't mess around. Like, they really work hard. We all put in our time and make sure that that is spot on.
Yeah, everybody does their homework. Like, everybody knows what we're doing. Everybody knows what we're doing before we even come to practice. So it's not like once everybody starts, it's all just like a bunch of noise. Like,
and
knows
that's
what part they have and what they contribute.
Yeah.
And, you know, for whatever song we're doing. So it kind of, it's in good process.
Yeah, and it's important, too, because, I mean, it's 11 people. I mean, honest to God, it's 11 people in Jeremy's basement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we're trying to put together music. So when everybody does their homework and everything's firing right, it takes us about a good 4 practices to get a song ironed out to where we're comfortable with it.
We got to make the girls put their phones away.
Yeah,
we have
that.
A no phone zone when we practice because they like to, you know, go through their Facebook and everything while we're practicing.
We know our.
But really, there is a hard part about it because, you know, when we learned it while we were younger, and if we didn't learn it the right way, is relearning it the right way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were songs that we had to revisit, and we catch a chord here and there that we were adamant that that was the chord. But now with all the technology, and you got YouTube, and you got people playing it right there, and, you know, you can see it dry. You see somebody else playing, it gives you, well, maybe I'm not playing it right. Maybe I should, you know, go back to that way. So trying to relearn stuff is really hard, you know, once you've done it for 10, 15 years, you know. So, but that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get it to where we have it exactly like they did it. So, you know, there's more of an approach of, you know, when we do learn a song, everybody comes in and do exactly, and it's almost like a contest, who knows it more than the other guy.
Mm-hmm. Hey, you better make sure you practice, because they're going to be calling you out.
Yeah. No.
Stop,
no.
Now you're talking about learning albums in their entirety. Off the cuff, ballpark figure, how many Pink Floyd songs do you think you guys have down that you could pull out at any point? Just musically speaking, not necessarily the lights.
We could probably brush up on a good 70 Pink Floyd songs, wouldn't you say?
Well, I mean, if you think about it, we've done all of
Metal.
We've done all of Animals, Dark Side of the Moon. We've done The Wall. We do stuff off of Momentary Lapse of Reason. We do stuff as far back as their first single. We've done Arnold Lang and stuff like that. So honest to God, there's very few. There's maybe a handful of Floyd songs that we haven't at least touched.
Mm-hmm. Now, Floyd songs are so long, many of them.
Oh yeah.
How many do you average in a typical show? I mean, you're playing, let's say, a 2-hour show. There's a lot of music. How do you decide what to fit in?
That's Jeremy's role. He's really good at making the set list, though, and he knows exactly what to start with and what to end with. And even if we're not doing an album in its entirety, you know, he knows, okay, this song goes right here, right before the end, and this song is a great opener. And so I don't know. What do you do with your process then?
A lot of times I'll just visualize in my head what, you know, if a song will end like in G or something, then the next song starts out in E. You know, it really depends on what I think the audience is going to, like, really cheer for, or if they're going to just give it the golfer clap, you know what I mean?
Because there's the audience is for the night.
Yeah. So it really depends. But I try to, I mean, they do have some slow, drawn-out stuff, so it's kind of hard sometimes. I got to, you know, throw in the Young Lust or, you know, the Brick in the Wall in there to, you know, keep it alive, you know, because, I mean, you can, you know, I mean, I think we might have put people to sleep everyone's there.
Echoes is a scary song for people that aren't familiar with Floyd.
We're worried because, you know, you do a 13-minute song, you're worried if you're going to lose somebody.
Right.
You know what I mean? But then they just like it anyway. They really do.
Like Shine On You Crazy Diamond. I think that's like a 9-10-minute song, something like that.
And we cut down that song
at the beginning just because it's like, all right, I think this is pushing it. You know, people who are true Pink Floyd fans, like, they'll know how long the intro is, but if you're not that much of a Pink Floyd fan, I don't know if you're going to be interested in sitting around for that, you know, 6-minute intro of
cutting out the guitar solo. That's all they're doing. Cutting out the guitar solo. I see how it is.
Oh man, you know, you've got some of the diehards, like you said, that want to hear Journey to the Heart of the Sun, things like that. Do you ever get will you take a request? Someone says, "Man, please play that," and you play it, and the rest of the audience does fall asleep. I mean, basically, because a lot of people don't know it.
Yeah, I had an instance where a guy was in the front row,
mm-hmm.
and he after we got done
with, I think it was Astronomy Domini.
Okay.
And, you know, and then it kind of, we ended it, and the guy looked at me, and he just kind of motioned me like, let's pick it up. You know what I mean? Whereas, you know, there's a like, right. You know, the really authentic Pink Floyd
they're
fans.
They're going crazy.
They're going nuts, but he's looking at me like, no, let's get back to breaking the wall here, pal. You know what I mean? Right. Give me the hits, you know?
The best look is on the people's faces when you pull out like a bike or an Arnold Lang, and they're looking at you like, that's not Pink Floyd. It's like, oh, no, it really is.
Yeah. I love Bike. Bike has got to be one of my favorite songs.
You know what? That song, I swear to God, out of all the Floyd songs, that song was the hardest song to learn.
Really?
Because I think Sid just had the band play to him. I don't think there was no count or anything to it.
I used to play that on my other station all the time. I love the Sid Barrett era, and I used to play Bike a lot because it was short enough I could get away with.
Right.
You know?
There you go.
I could throw it in without like the program director yelling at me. Mm-hmm. So is that going to be part of the New Year's Eve show by chance, Bike? Any chance?
No, you know, this year...
Or is it more hits?
It's more hits, and we're going starting... Since we know all these albums, we'll start with an album and we'll go so far with it, and then we'll go into another album. Like, well, we're doing a lot from The Wall this time, you know, and we just change up, you know, like we did a lot of the earlier stuff in the last couple of shows, so now we're trying to, you know, go with, you know, a lot of The Wall and the hits in it, but also some of the stuff that you normally don't listen to on the radio, like the Nobody's Home and, you know, and the one we just played.
Goodbye Blue Sky,
you know, or Thin Ice, you know, we're incorporating those type of songs, and they start from In the Flesh, and they go all the way through to Brick in the Wall. Okay. So we're taking segments out and doing it that way, and I like it like that because, you know, you can get into that moment when you did have your headphones on, and, you know, you were away from the world, and you could put it on, you could just takes you back to when you used to do that, and you can go a good five or six songs in, and then we'll go into something else and do the same thing. You know?
Now, in most bar bands and in typical rock bands, we see the performers right before the show writing out their set list.
Yeah.
Now, Jeremy, this is going to fall on you because you have to know who your audience is ahead of time because you have to coordinate with your audiovisual people or your visual people so that when you're doing a song, they know what scenes to play. So you can't just throw something in off the cuff, can you?
Not for something like this. You got to roll the dice a little bit, you know, and you just got to hope that, you know, you don't scare somebody out of place. You know, I don't know. We've never have scared anybody out. You just get nervous, you know, but it always works out. I think as long as you stay true to trying to keep the audience involved and keep them, you know, keep the flow of the music going. Mm-hmm. I think that's the main thing. And people are looking for a show, and we like to, you know, there's a lot to see with our show. It's not just like a four-piece band going out there. There's, you know, you're going to miss something if you see us. You know, there's 11 pieces. I think we might even have 12 for this one. But there's so much to look at with the audio, the visuals, and everything else. People, and like with the Library of Pink Floyd, you don't ever have to worry about material. So it's always something different, and people, you know, will always they always want to come back because they feel like they might have missed something.
Know, so if you see the show once, you haven't seen the whole show.
No.
Because you're going to be looking to the right, and next time you look to the left.
Right. That's it. Yeah. And Jeremy's on it. He already got us our set and about a week or so ago. And, you know, and it's like you're saying, we've got to get it to the sound crew. We've got to get it to the light crew. We got to get it to the video people because it all has to tie in. And along with the people at the theater at the square, they're in on it, too, on making sure that the set is set a certain way, and you know there's going to be stools out here for one part and everything, and so he went above and beyond on this set. It's a good set. You know, I wished I could sit here and list them all for you guys, but I'm telling you,
we want to keep a surprise.
Yeah. It's a great set. And when he sent it over, I was happy as a clam. It's a really good set.
Have you guys ever? And you may have already done it, but have you ever done the Wizard of Oz? With
I did
the Dark
it
Side.
I did that on the video, the cassette VHS. And it was like after, the second Lion Roar, and you press play, and you start, that's how it all starts. And it does go along with it.
Yeah.
which would actually be cool in our show if we could sync it up.
Didn't I think Cindy did that for us one time?
You know, I don't get to see what's behind me.
Yeah, no.
Sometimes I don't even know what's
going on. So when you were doing the album, she actually played
it? Oh, yeah, yeah. And, really? See, and like Jason's saying, a lot of time he's got to be, you know, he's the front man, so he's looking out front. A lot of times I'm sitting here, I catch myself watching the screen, and I'm not looking out seeing what's going on. It's like, wow, this is really cool.
See the video a lot of times beforehand. So, same with me, Andy. You know, if I just happen to turn my head and I see the video on one of the side screens, I'm like, that's really cool.
It. Yeah. You're locked in.
Let's do another song. We've got about 8 minutes left, so let's play a song, and we'll say goodbye on the other side and remind you once again where you can get tickets to see Echoes of Pompeii on New Year's Eve.
Thank you.
Yeah. Echoes of Pompeii. And another classic track from the Pink Floyd catalog. And again, they're going to be performing New Year's Eve, not one but two shows. Join them at 6 o'clock. And then for the second show at 10 p.m., there is a buffet before each. You can get the details on it and your tickets right now at theateratthecenter.com. And I do encourage you to go there soon because New Year's Eve is a big night out. And, of course, there is only 400 and some seats.
Yes.
So this is going to be a show that I'm sure is going to sell out because you guys are the top of the game with this stuff. All right. That leaves us with nothing left to do but say goodnight. We've had Jeremy, Jason, Allison, Jessica, and Andy, half of the band. And you get to see the whole band when you join them on New Year's Eve. And again, that's at Theater at the Center, theateratthecenter.com.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you, Tom.
All righty.
Tom, it's always an honor.
Thank you.